So we are holding on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. Yeah. We discussed yesterday about the fact the Pasuk tells us that Menashe had 10 sections of land in Eretz Yisrael, in Eber Yarden, on the west side of the Yarden, that is, aside from what they got on the east side. Meaning that their Nachla can be thought of as consisting of 10 portions. How do we have 10? So we discussed. There were 6 Batei Avos. There were 6 large families, clans, you might call them, that comprised most of Shevet Menashe, or at least the half that was on that side of the Yarden. And then you have B'nai Tzlafchot. We talked about yesterday the various possibilities, how B'nai Tzlafchot inherited 4 portions. Either it was the one that should have gone to Tzlafchot, 2 that he should have gotten from Chefer, because Chefer was one of the Yotzim of Giants. No, this is on the west side of the Yarden, and it's Yisrael proper.
More in Yarden
no.
than in
Yisrael. No, perhaps there was more in Eretz Yisrael. But whatever, for our purposes, we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael proper. But no Tzlafchot specifically wanted in Eretz Yisrael proper. So we said yesterday that there were 10 portions, so 6 for the 6 Batei Av, and then 4 for B'nai Tzlafchot. And we talked about the 2 possibilities, how they got 4. Either it's 1 that should have gone to Tzlafchot, because he was one of the Yotzim Mitzrayim, 2 that should have come from Chefer, because again, he was from the Yotzim Mitzrayim, as well as Tzlafchot had a brother who died childless in the Midbar, and they inherited him. That's one way of looking at it. Or if we say the Boi Ha'aretz and Tzchalka Ha'aretz, that Eretz Yisrael is divided strictly among, based on the people who came into Eretz Yisrael, then what we would say is that they had 2 portions that should have, because Tzlafchot is a Bechor, so 2 portions that Tzlafchot would get as a Bechor from Chefer and Mechassim, as well as he had 2 brothers that died in the Midbar.
Why we didn't have 2 portions for him on the other side? He was also.
We did, according to the first way. We said 1 for Tzlafchot and 2 for Chefer.
Tzlafchot should have 2, he was a Bechor.
According to the first way of looking at it, the Yotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka Aret, means Tzlafchot himself is Yotzim Mitzrayim, therefore he's entitled to his own portion. Second of all, Chefer, who was also from Yotzim Mitzrayim, was entitled, Chefer, yes, Tzlafchot's father, was also entitled to a portion, which his children, his sons, will divide among themselves. Tzlafchot being a Bechor, he's going to get 2 portions of that. So for example, if Chefer had 4 sons, let's say, then Tzlafchot would have gotten 2 parts out of 5, and the other his brothers would have gotten 1 each. So we're saying then that, so according to that way of looking at it again, there's 1 that Tzlafchot would have gotten in his own right, 2 that he would have gotten from Chefer, being Chefer's Bechor, and 1 for the fact that they had, that Tzlafchot had a brother who died childless in the Midbar, and they inherited from him. So that's the 4th one, so that's 4. Or the other way of looking at it, if we hold the Boi Ha'aretz and Tzchalka Ha'aretz, if we hold, like Rabbi Yonasan, that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on the people who came into Eretz Yisrael, then, what? Yeah, well, on Amud Aleph of that, but yeah. I'm going to Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. We learned at the beginning of the Gemara. So then we would say that the 4 portions that B'nai Tzlafchot had are 2 that they got because Tzlafchot is a Bechor of Chefer. So therefore, he has a Chelek Bechorah, which passed down to his daughters, therefore, and they get that. And the other 2 would be, again, that Tzlafchot had brothers who died in the Midbar childless, and they inherit that.
And it went to
Tzlafchot's daughters. So now the question comes like this. What is the Pasuk listing when it's saying 10 portions of land? Each falim kachoshim, if it's listing all the portions that went to the young people who were born in the Midbar, 20 when they went into Eretz Yisrael, or even who were born in Mitzrayim or whatever, if we're going to describe like that, Tuva Avu, then there's many more than 10. There are thousands of them. I mean, the first census of Menashe numbered 32,000 and some. The second census numbered, 52,000 and some. They increased by 20,000. So if you're talking, we're talking over here, Tzlafchot and his daughters. If we're going to start listing every individual portion, then why is the Pasuk only saying 10 portions for Menashe? In that case, you would have to say 30,000, 32,000, or 52,000, or whatever. And he bought the other kachosh of Shittahav. If you're only counting the large extended families, the clans that descend from the 6 sons of Gilad, then there's only 6. Why are we listing the portions that the nice Tzlafchot got as if they were equal to the other portions that the various Batei Avos got? Like I was saying yesterday, it would be the equivalent of saying that Lahavdil, the United States, consists of 100 sections, 49 states, and New York State consists of 51 counties. You don't say it that way. You either count states or you count counties. So the same, yeah, the same thing over here. What are you going to do? You count? Are you counting what goes to the body of us, or are you counting what goes to the individual family? The answer is, basically, we're only counting body of us. We're not counting the individual families, except we are counting for those plus separately. We do count those four portions as something special. But how come Ashmalon? Because Taka the Pasuk wants to inform us exactly that. The B'nai Slavchad Naplu Chelek B'chayra. The Pasuk wants to inform us, you should know, B'nai Slavchad, among those four portions, is the portion of Chelek B'chayra, the fact that their father Slavchad is a B'chayra, and that therefore he gets two portions from Chayfer.
Why did we have to...
The reason why we have to know that is Talma Eretz Yisrael Mukhzeket. That comes to teach us that Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzeket. Remember, we discussed before, and we're going to discuss later on in the Perek, we're going to discuss the whole concept that a Bechor does not get a double portion from Rov, only from Mukhzeket. We talked about this.
Yeah.
That if you have property that was not part of the estate at the time when the father died, even if afterwards it becomes, the Bechor doesn't get a double portion of that. If we were to say that, in the case of Eretz Yisrael, if we were to say that Eretz Yisrael is Roy, then they don't get a double portion of on account of the fact that Tzlachad was a Bechor. Since Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzeket, that the Pasuk wants to stress that point, and therefore it lists the portions of Tzlachad's daughters individually.
So we stressed some of those.
No, this is where we're stressing it. This is how we know. We learned from a drasha from Sukkim, Nosin Titzin Lahem means their father is Nachla, Vesecha Chayavien means the Nachla from their uncle, Ba'avarka is Nachla Savien Lahem Zuchelet Bechorda. Fine. In the Torah, in Parashas Pinchas, when it describes what the Eibishter tells Moshe to give no slachot, you have extra words in the Pasuk that you can darshan for that. But here it's Mefarish, and in Sefer Yoshua, when it says that there were 10 portions from Manasseh, it makes it more explicit. That how do they come down 4 portions because of Chelek Bechorah involved?
Can you answer one sentence? Why does it say 3 here?
The Mishnah only mentions 3 because that's the only one that there's a chiddush on. The fact that they had a brother, the fact that Slavchan had a brother or two brothers who died in the Midbar and they inherited that, there's no particular chiddush in that.
You mean that was not a chiddush?
Right. The chiddush is that they get the double portion that Slavchad gets from Chayfer. The chiddush is that the Mishnah is telling the Mishnah is according to the opinion that the Yotzim Mitzrayim is Kalka Oret, and therefore Slavchad is entitled to his own portion. That those things are the chiddush. The fact that Slavchad had a brother who died in the Midbar and they inherited that, there's no extra chiddush in that.
But that din was not established until they complained to Hashem, right?
That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to bring a braisa that discusses what exactly was the daughter's complaint. What exactly were they asking for? We started discussing yesterday. Actually, we talked about on Kof Yud Chet. We talked about according to the opinion on the Boya Oret Neschalka Oret. According to the Yonason's opinion, we said then what's no Slavchad's problem? Slavchad's dead in the Midbar. He's not entitled to a chelik of their own. The answer is they're still arguing that we should stand in his place. He would have been Miboy Haaretz had he not died in the Midbar. Therefore, just like everybody else who was Yotzei Mitzrayim, has children who come into Eretz Yisrael and inherit their portion and are counted in the second census, we should stand in place of him and be able to do that as well. And we should be able to, there should be Chazara involved. We should have a portion which will then go back to him and then be redivided.
Okay.
No, that's not it. We're saying that because Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzeket. No, because Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzeket, therefore they're entitled, therefore it's considered as if the Nachla was already in his possession. And the reason why we're saying Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzeket, by the way, as we discussed before and we're going to discuss later, because the Eibishter told the Jewish people, V'nasati oisal pachan meirasha, therefore that's considered already Mukhzeket. Once the Eibishter makes a promise, that's it. It's as good as done.
Mukhzeket
means it actually belongs to them.
Right, but don't you count from the time they were ready to go to Eretz Yisrael that it's Mukhzeket?
You count from when the Eibishter made this promise.
Which is
that right before you see us Mitzrayim. And maybe even from before, maybe even from the Avos. We learned before, but the other held right that Avraham Avinu made a kinyan on Eretz Yisrael, but even if you don't hold like that, fine, it's still, yeah. There is, by the way, an interesting thing about that in Halacha, which means, for example, now when you consider it, I mean, okay, we're talking about whether Eretz Yisrael was Mukhzeket. The fact of the matter is, at that point in history, the Knanim are living in it. But since our Gemara is telling us that it's Mukhzeket, what it means is it doesn't matter. It's still considered to be in the possession of the Jewish people, which leads to an issue, which leads to a point brought in Halacha, which most of the Rishonim agree with and is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if you have, for example, property that belongs to the father and then was stolen from him and somebody else is squatting on that property, it's still considered Mukhzeket. then eventually you get it from the back from the Gazlan, the Bechor will get a double portion of it. It's not considered Roy, it's considered Mukhsar, because it was in his possession while he was alive, and just then it was taken away from him legally.
So in other words, the Titan prophecy changed when the Edisha made the promise,
yeah.
Not when it was conquered.
Not when it was conquered, exactly, that's the point. Okay, all right. Omamar, so now
many
getting...
years before?
40 years. 40 years. Yeah. Okay. Omamar, let's get back to the Braisa we learned on Kofiut Chesam Adbeiz yesterday. We said that the Meraglim lost their portion in Eretz Yisrael was taken over by Yehoshua and Kol. We said the Mesloinim and Adat Korach lost their portions, and we had two different opinions whether those were also taken away, taken over by Yehoshua and Kol, or whether they went collectively to the other members of their respective Shvatim. We said, but we said the children of the Meraglim or the Misloinim or Adas Torah or whatever were able to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael, not because of their fathers, because their fathers were the Meraglim or Adas Torah or what have you, but they were able to get in the schus of their father's father or their mother's father. Meaning, in other words, for example, the father of one of the Meraglim was, let's say, the father of one of the Meraglim, let's say, was one of the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So fine, maybe they didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, their grandchildren are entitled to a portion. No, all of them were Yotzei Eretz Mitzrayim, but they all, except for Yehoshua and Kolev, they all died in the desert right after the story of the Meraglim by Yamusu Hanoshim, by Siyah Dibas Aris. They all died in an unnatural way. Yeah. So yeah.
So
what? So we're talking about their children are not getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael on the basis of their fathers, because even though their fathers were Yotzei Mitzrayim, they forfeited it, but they can get in the schus of their grandparents who left Mitzrayim. Question is, well, Tanya B'schus Atzma, you have another braisa that says that the children of the Meraglim and Adas Korach and so forth are able to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael in their own right. The answer is like Asha. Ha'kamando amal Yotzei Mitzrayim, ha'kamando amal Abayi Horet. Very simple. The one braisa is going according to the opinion of Rabbi Yoshia that Yotzei Mitzrayim was chalka aret, that the land was divided among the people who left Mitzrayim. So therefore, unless you have somebody in your direct line of ancestry who came out of Mitzrayim, then you're not going to getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So again, you can't get on your own because you weren't one of the Yotzei Mitzrayim. You were born in the Midbar. But you can get in the school. You can't get in the school of your father because he was one of the Meraglim, but you can get in the school of your grandfather because he wasn't, because, yeah. Where the second braisa would go, according to the opinion, the second braisa that says that they get in their own right is going according to the opinion, anybody who's zoicha to come into Eretz Yisrael, who's 20 or older at the time, is getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And of necessity, the Rashbam points out, in connection with the next little bit of the discussion, that the children of Meraglim and of Adas Torah and of the Mesloinim of Adas Torah all had to be older than 20 when they came into Eretz Yisrael, because all of those events happened very early during the period in the Midbar. The Meraglim we know happened the second year. They sent out Meraglim Erev Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. And they came back Tisha B'Av. They came back like this is a year and 5 months after Yetzias Mitzrayim. The story of Korach was not long after that also. So and you still have from there. You have 39 years or so until they came into Eretz Yisrael. So of necessity, the children of the Meraglim and the children of Adas Korach and whatever all had to be older than 20 when they came into Eretz Yisrael. So if we say Leboi Ha'aretz and Schalka Ha'aretz, that anybody who's 20 and over when they come into Eretz Yisrael gets a portion, good, well, then they're entitled to a portion in their own right. Okay. The Iboi same, or another possibility, Ha'va Leboi Ha'aretz, you could answer that both Braises are going according to the opinion that Eretz Yisrael is divided among Boi Ha'aretz, is divided among the people who come into Eretz Yisrael. The Loikasha had to have a Ben Esrim, had to have a Ben Esrim. But there's still no contradiction. One is talking about people who are over 20. They're entitled to land the Schus Asman because they themselves are Boi Ha'aretz who are over 20. And the other one that says that they get in the Schus of their grandparents is the Loihavu B'nei Esrim, is when they're not yet 20 years old. Now, obviously, then again, we can't be talking about the children, the actual children of the Mesloinim or Adas Korach or the Meraglim, etc., because their parents died long before, much more than 20 years before they came into Eretz Yisrael. So the Rashbam explains we have to be talking about what we mean is not their children literally, but their grandchildren. So let's say, for example, you have a Mesloinim who dies in the desert, and he left behind a son. And let's say that child, let's say, also died in the Midbar. So they're still not Boi Ha'aretz. But you have a grandchild of the Mesloinim let's say, or the Meraglim, or what have you. Again, because that child, let's say, is not to that grandchild now, or one of the Meraglim, let's say, is not yet 20 years old, so he can't be getting in his own schos because he's not yet 20 when he comes into Eretz Yisrael, according to the opinion of the Bar Yaaret. He can't be getting from his father because his father is not Bar Yaaret. He can't be getting from his grandfather. Not only his grandfather was not Bar Yaaret, but his grandfather was from Meraglim anyway, and they forfeited their portion. So you have to go back yet another year.
His father was what?
His father was one of the children of the Meraglim, let's say, but his grandfather was one of the Meraglim. The point would be, though, that if we say according to the Shimon ben Elazar, if we say as we said when we had the three opinions how Eretz Yisrael was divided, that Reb Shimon ben Elazar says it depends. If you're from Yotzei Mitzrayim, you get a portion on that basis. If you're from Bar Yaaretz, you get a portion on that basis. And if you're both, then you get two portions. And in principle, if you're neither, you get neither one. Okay. So if we say that this braita is like that, then what it means now, so he doesn't hold of the concept of chazara, remember. He doesn't say, like Rabbi Yonason did, that you start dividing it among Bar Yaaretz, but then you return it to their fathers and redivide it based on that. He doesn't hold of that whole concept. So therefore, this braita would be, so one possibility, the Rashbam has a long explanation over here. One possibility is that this braita is going according to the Shimon Elazar. And therefore, so what we're saying is, if you have a grandchild of one of the Meraglim who's not yet 20 when they come into Eretz Yisrael, and his father died in the Midbar, and his grandfather was from the Meraglim, so therefore, even though they were Yotzei Mitzrayim, they forfeited their portion, then you have to go back to their great grandfather who was one of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, and they'll get on that basis. And that's one possibility. And then the other possibility is if we say that this Braita goes like Rabbi Yoshia. Like Rabbi Yonason, rather, that Laboy Ha'oretz, but then you return it to the fathers and redivide it on that basis. Again, so fine. What you do is like that. Even though the Meraglim or the Mesloinim or whatever are in the chain of descent over there, you might say, well, they forfeited. That means you don't even do Chazara. No, we still go back to their fathers and still do Chazara on that basis. We still say that since their fathers were from Yotzei Mitzrayim, Therefore, their descendants are still going to be able to. So even though so these are the children or grandchildren, whatever we're talking about, of Mislonim or Adaf Kardach or what have you, are still going to be able to get a chelik on that basis, even if they themselves are less than 20 when they come into Eretz Yisrael. And if they're over 20, fine, it's Chosafma, and then they're entitled on their own. Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now the Mishnah had continued. Rishahaya Bechor, we said one of the aspects that Bnei Tzlochad got portions in Eretz Yisrael, because Tzlochad was a Bechor, we said Notol Shnei Chalokim, so he got a double portion of what Tzlochad of what Tzlochad should have inherited from Chayfer. Question is, am I Roy? Why should he be getting a double portion? Isn't it considered Roy? At this point, the Gemara, even though we already had the Gemara told us Eretz Yisrael Mechuzekesi. Remember, the Gemara is eventually written down for us the way Ravina and Ravashi collected it from the different Amiroyim. Not necessarily did the original discussions take place in the order we had them in the Gemara over here. So when this discussion takes place, they didn't know that concept yet. They figured Eretz Yisrael was only Roy. It's not yet definitive that they actually have it in their possession. It's still only Roy. It's going to happen. And a Bechor does not get from Roy as he does from Mukhtar. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, be said as Oyalim. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, you're right. When we say that Bnei Tzlochad get a double portion of what Tzlochad would have gotten from Chefer, we don't mean of land in Eretz Yisrael. We mean of Metalpilin. When we say that a Bechor gets a double portion of his father's Mechosim, it means of everything. Metalpilin, Karka, everything. So you say this all in, so even pegs for tents. So the Ritva says, by the way, why are we mentioning that? Because everybody in the Midbar had a tent, so of necessity they had pegs. So that's like, we mention that as like one kind of a talisman that's a given everybody had. Yeah, because not necessarily. Some people might have worn slip-on shoes, but...
No, I'm saying, but, yeah. Like today.
Right, yeah, but the tent pegs are something that everybody would have had. Yeah. They say also a point of it is, I think they bring from a bit of Hananel, that the point of it is even though pegs of tents are banged into the ground, you would think maybe they're considered like karka. No, they're still considered like metal. But yeah, according to Shmuel, it would come out.
They're removable.
Because they're removable, yeah. So according to Shmuel, it would come out that yes, when we say that Bnei Slavchad get a double portion because their father Slavchad was a Bechor, we don't mean in Karka, because the Karka is Takad Roy, it's not yet in Slavchad's or Chayfer's or anybody's possession, but they get from the Mkalfin. However, Motiv Rabba, however, Rabba asks the question, what do you mean? We said before, we said in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bnei Slavchad Natul Dalav Chalokim, Bnei Slavchad got four portions in Eretz Yisrael, Shenema Vayiplu Kavlim and Asha Asara, as it says that there were 10 areas of land assigned to Menashe. And Chavlei, by the way, has to mean land, because Chevel is a rope. Chavlei means areas that are measured with a rope, which is land. Metavlin isn't measured with ropes. So therefore, and we said before how exactly we reached the figure of 10, but either way, however you figure it, it means that Bnei Slavchad had four portions, and among those four portions is the Chelek Bechora of their father. So now comes Rabba and tells us, no, don't answer like Shmuel, that all they're entitled to is a double portion of the Metalpilin. No, they're entitled to a double portion of the Karaka because Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzak, because Eretz Yisrael is considered as already in the Chazaka of the Jewish people once the Abishah made the promise that it's going to.
If it was Rai, they would have had.
Then they Taka wouldn't have had a double portion. Then they Taka only get a double portion of Yesedis Olim and all the Metalpilin. No, they would get a single portion. No, so again, yeah, we would say if we said the Yotzei Mitzrayim, then fine, they're entitled to a portion from Slavchad, a portion from Chesed, because both of them were Yotzei Mitzrayim, and fine, you know, they had one or two uncles who died, fine, okay, but they wouldn't be entitled to a Chesed Bechorah. They wouldn't be entitled to an extra Chelek on the ground that Slavchad was a Bechorah.
If you say that it's
Roy and not Mukhzak. But once Rabbah comes in as Mechavish for us, that Eretz Yisrael is Mukhzekasi, then that's it. They're entitled to a double portion, just like a Bechor is in their father's Mechas many times, because they're standing in the place of their father, Slavchad, who was a Bechor. All right. The Gemara says Meisvi. Okay, but I have a contradiction to that idea that you're saying that Eretz Yisrael Mukhzekasi. On the basis of the following Braisa, so it's a longish Braisa, so we'll see the whole Braisa, and then we'll get to what the actual question of it is. Amar of Chidka, Shimon Hashikmoni Hoyuli Chovim Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. I had a colleague from the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva named Shimon Hashikmoni. Shikmoni apparently is a place in Eretz Yisrael. I've seen it identified as someplace near Haifa. Anyway, Shikmon, whatever was the name of the place. Shimon Hashikmoni. He came from that town. So he must have been one of the 24,000 original Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So this is very negay at this time of year. Anyway,
oh,
yeah. Yes. He's not listed among the five who Rabbi Akiva came and taught afterwards. So the pastor, he must have been one of the original ones. Okay. And so Rabbi Shimon Hashikmoni used to say as follows: Moshe Rabbeinu knew good and well that Bnei Slavchad had to be able to yarshim. Why is that, the Rashbam says? Because we know many, many years earlier, even before Matan Torah, when they were in Mara, after they sweetened the bitter water, and there was some loy chokul mishpat, there the Eved set up for him chokul mishpat, and what does chokul mishpat mean? He taught him various dinim, one of them being dinim, nitzavu b'mara, dinim meaning dinim mamonos. The Eved taught Moshe Rabbeinu the basics of dinim mamonos all the way back there in Mara. This is 40 years before Bnei Slavchad coming. And he had to teach it to the inn, yeah. So he knew full well then that they were supposed to be yarshining.
So what did he...
Okay.
Also, by the way,
the Rashbam adds that also he could have learned it from Parshas Yevamim. We see that when it comes to Yibum, that whether a person leaves behind a son or a daughter or any descendant, then there's no Yibum. He should have been able to deduce from that the same thing. Whether a person leaves a son or a daughter, they still Yashin. But he didn't know. What he didn't know is, do they get the Chelek Bechora or not? That's the point which we're going to use, that we're going to continue to say the whole Braisa, but that's the point we're going to get to is, why doesn't he know? If Eretz Yisrael Mukhzekasi, then it should be obvious.
Yeah.
And he continued, Uruya hoist the parashas nachlus likotiv
ayideh. Very considered. Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's strong.
Yeah. He knew that. He didn't know if they get Bnei Chelek Bechora. Now, really, this parasha of Nachlois should have been written through Moshe. In other words, when you think about it, most things in the Torah, it's not an episode happened and therefore such and such a mitzvah was given. The mitzvahs of Chachmaseh, Ratzon Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are independent of what happens of what actually happens in the world. And we know the mitzvahs that the thing never even happens, and they're still in the Torah. So chaket, in other words, so the Rashbam says what the Gemara is trying to tell us, what the Braita is trying to tell us. Don't think that the only reason why we have this din of Nachlos is because the Bnei Plachot spoke up. And had they not spoken up, then that mitzvah would be missing from the Torah. And then you'd start thinking, well, maybe there were lots of other mitzvahs that Eved wanted to give, but there was never an opportunity. No, don't think like that. Had it not been for Bnei Plachot, it would have been given in the usual way. By Dabar Hashem Moshe Lamer, if a person dies and doesn't have a son, then his daughter inherits the whole of the whole. But Bnei Slavchot had this close that it was written because of them. They spoke up, and therefore they triggered that it happened. But if they hadn't been there, or they hadn't spoken up, or whatever, it still would have been given like all the other mitzvahs in the regular way. Yeah, Rashi mentions them on the
bottom. Why did they have to speak up then?
They spoke up because that was their course that they were saying Lama Migora, that they were saying that Lama Migora Shema Vinu, that why should our father's name
spoke
be
up because they didn't know that it was gonna be in the future given anyway.
But the point is it was their course. It's in their course that it was written. Exactly, that's what we're gonna say. Similarly, in another case, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Mekoshish Eitzim from Parashat Shlach is Chayav Mitzah, Shenema Mechalalei on Mois Yomos, because the Pasuk says, the person who breaks Shabbat is Chayav Mitzah.
Mm-hmm.
But what he didn't know is what death penalty should be, what should be the right one. And again, now, by rights, this Parashas Mekoshesh, again, should have been written through Moshe. In other words, it should have been, again, the regular kind of thing that the Eved would have one day told Moshe, by Dabar Hashem Moshe Leimer, you should know, a person is Mechalel Shabbos, get skila. Eloshen is Chayiv Mekoshesh v'nichtav al yadoi, but the Mekoshesh was guilty, and therefore it was written through him. Now, this is why we mentioned the Mekoshesh over here. There are actually a couple of other cases in the Torah. We had in Parshas Emor. We just had the Megadeth, for example. The one reason why we mentioned the Mekoshesh specifically over here is because we have the famous discussion in Masechta Shabbos whether the Mekoshesh, according to one opinion, the Mekoshesh is none other than Plachot, and therefore it's appropriate to mention it. Okay, Tosfos, by the way, brings up the point. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's question? We know a general rule that whenever the Torah says that somebody is chayev mitzah, but doesn't specify what the mitzah is, it means chenek. Because chenek is the least worst of all the ones. We'll learn in Sanhedrin, we'll talk about the Dalad mitzvah based in which one is the worst, which one is the second worst, etc. You have to have two different opinions about it, but whatever, the halacha is. Chenek is strangulation. They take a scarf and then wrap it around his neck, and each one of the Edom pulls from one end.
No.
Those are the Edom that warned him, obviously.
He warns them, and you better mean it.
Yeah, really. that's considered to be the least worst of all the Dalad mitzvahs, and it's the default. So then, fine, the Torah says that a person who's Mechal Shabbos gets Mitzah. What's Moshe Rabbeinu's question? You give him Chenek, that's that. Tosfos says, because Moshe Rabbeinu thought, but maybe, on the other hand, we consider a person who's Mechal Shabbos is like he's Oved Avodah Zarah, which comes up in many places in Halacha. We know, for example, that just like, for example, a goy touches wine, it's not mavushal, he makes it today, he makes it also. So also Mechal Shabbos with Mechal, yeah? There's a number of other things in Halacha where we see that a Mechal Shabbos is considered like a Mumur L'Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah gets Tzchila. Maybe Shabbos gets Tzchila also. Also, by the way, Tosfos points out another interesting point in this. Usually when the Edim warn somebody that you don't do this, you're going to be Chayav Mitzah, you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda who says you actually have to tell him, if you do this, you are going to be Chayav Skila or Sefer or what have you. Here, how could they do that if they themselves didn't know? So Tosfos' answer is fine. According to the Rabbanon, it's easy enough. All they have to tell him is Chayav Mitzah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you would have to say Torah Shah. that yes, normally taka a person would not be chayav mitzvah on that basis because they couldn't tell him what mitzvah. But we would have to say in this case, the Eibishter gave Moshe specific instruction. Nevertheless, he's still chayav mitzvah. Anyway,
how do we know you have special?
We'll learn when we'll get to Sanhedrin. We'll get to Sanhedrin in a half a year or
that
so. That's Hashem.
Did you have to specify exactly which percent?
We'll see how Rabbi Yehuda learns it. We'll see over there when we get to it in a few months' time. That's Hashem. We'll see how Rabbi Yehuda learns it. Okay. Tishrei time, I think. That's Hashem. We'll get there again. Okay. So the Lamdacha, so continuing with the Gemara, the Lamdacha, so all of this teaches you, this that we see that the Parashat Nachlos was written because of Bnei Tzlafchot, meaning not because of it, would have been written regardless, but Bnei Tzlafchot had this course that they spoke up, and therefore, and it's written as a result, and not as a result, it's written in response to, it's written in a form that's a response to their thing, and similarly with the Mekoshesh. The Lamdacha, this teaches you, Shemagagal Mitzvotayde Zaka Vachayvayde Chayat. That course is brought about through a zakai, through a righteous person, this that you have, that the Eibishter gave the details there, that children and relatives, Yarshin, that comes out through a zakai, through a good person, namely Bnei Tzlafchot. V'choiva alidei chayev, and choiva, the fact that chila is given to a mechal Shabbos, that's alidei chayev, that's through a person who's guilty, as opposed to chenek, right? Now, mind you, Tosfos says at the bottom of the Amud, in connection with a further part of the discussion, that actually Tzlafchot himself, if we say Tzlafchot was a Mekoshesh Eitzim, that Tosfos brings from the Medrash that actually he meant what he did L'Shem Shemayim. Because what happened, according to one opinion, there's different opinions when the story of the Mekoshesh happened. One opinion is that it was actually Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there, that it was actually the first Shabbos that the Yidden were in the second Shabbos that the Yidden were in the Midbar. And then Rashi says over there that the Gnai, the Jewish people, look at that, they kept only one Shabbos properly, and the next Shabbos already this guy came and broke. It was still, but fine, but even so. But according to Tosfos brings from a Medrash that no, it happened in like this. The Torah tells in Parashat Shlach after the story of the Menagerim. So according to the opinion of the Medrash, it's out of chronological order. It happened around the time of the story of the Mon in Parashat B'Shalach, like the Shabbos after that, whatever. But then after, but it's written in Parashat Shlach for whatever reason. According to the Medrash that Tosfos brings, it happened actually in that place after the story of the Menagerim. What happened after the story of the Meraglim, everybody is very discouraged. You know what? We're going to be stuck in the Midbar for another 39 years. We're not chayiv and mitzvahs anymore. Fine. The Eibishter gave up on us. We gave up on him. We're not chayiv and mitzvahs anymore. So the Bedavta goes and then his Mekoshesh ate him and his Master asked him the Missa in order to demonstrate, no, mitzvahs are still very much in effect. And then and so he does L'Shem Shemayim. Now,
right.
Now, so in that case, by the way, Marshall discusses, in that case, when you get down to it, what he did is, so he taka in a certain sense was not really Mechal Shabbos, because it was a Melacha She'en Etzricha L'Gufa. He wasn't cutting the wood because he needed wood. He was cutting the wood in order to demonstrate that Shabbos is still in effect.
So in that case, you shouldn't be
Chai Misa. But the Edim and the Beis Din can only go based on what they know. So the guy may have something in his heart. The Eibishter knows the truth, Daka, but the Beis Din has to go, and then therefore the Eibishter tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to go. You saw that the guy is cutting wood on Shabbos, or the Edim saw, whatever. They warned him. He went ahead and did it anyway. He had in mind Tzlafchot or whoever it was. Fine, he had in mind to do it L'Shem Shemayim or whatever. You, the Beis Din, are not. Don't deal with that. You deal with what you see and what you hear from Edim. He says, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. Yeah, we'll learn about it in a Sanhedrin. Well, that's the point. In other words, he had it in his mind, but the Eibishter is telling Moshe, and it's based in, don't worry about what he had in his mind. That's between me and him. That's not between you and him. Okay. All right.
How do we know the Eibishter said Moshe about that?
Because the Pasuk says that the Moshe Rabbeinu isn't sure. We just said that Moshe is not sure what Mitzvah to give him. And the Eibishter tells him, Moshe, you must say, Ish Roger Moshe Ba'avonim. But everybody has to give him Tefillah. See ya? Okay. All right. So now comes the question. Now that we've quoted the Braisa, we're in the middle of it, we said that Moshe knew that Bnei Tzlafchot are supposed to get a portion, he just didn't know if they're supposed to get Chelek B'chayra. So if you're going to tell me, like Rabbi is saying, that Eretz Yisrael Mochzekes, that it's considered already that you have a Chazak on it, my come a stop for life. What's his suffix? He knows that a B'chayra gets a double portion from Mochzekes. The answer is he
the only way it could be Mochzekes.
The answer is, yeah. Yeah, the answer is he gufo kamastafka. Like that's exactly that itself was Moshe Rabbeinu's topic. Is Eretz Yisrael mochzak or not? Just did, because after all, the pasuk says, what's the source that we say that it's mochzak? Because the pasuk says back in Parshas Shmos, in Parshas Va'era, the Eibishter tells Moshe to go tell the Jewish people you're about to go out of Mitzrayim. There's the four lashonot of Geula, Oteisi, Vitzaltiv, Galtiv, Lakachti, and I will bring you to Yisrael. V'nasati oisalachem Moirosha ani Hashem, and I will give it to you as Moirosha. I am Hashem. Now, what does the word Moirosha mean? Does it mean Yerusha hi lachem me'avisechem? Does it mean Moirosha can be Moloshan Yerusha, as in something that you inherit, that you inherited from your ancestors, from Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? In that case, then it's Mochzak. Oiduma shemirushin ve'enen yoshin. Or maybe Faket, maybe the word Moirosha, as opposed to Yerusha, means Moirosha means something that will be bequeathed, but not something that actually belongs to you yet. Something,
like
something, that
roy,
something that's roy, but not mochzak.
Should be just the opposite, and Yerusha should be in the future.
Yerusha would mean something that you already own, which eventually is going to be a Yerusha to your children. Yerusha would mean that you have already inherited from your father. Moirosha could mean that. It could, like, Moirosha Kielos Yaakov. Or it could mean something that you are, that you don't have yet, but which eventually you will bequeath to your children, that your children will inherit after you all die in the desert. So in that case, it's not yet mochzak. It's only roy.
Yerusha is lashon hove, and Yerusha is lashon.
No, Yerusha. No, they're both nouns. But Moirosha.
Moirish means you inherit.
Moirish can mean to bequeath. That's the point. In other words, so Moirish can mean something that you bequeath. So it can, right? Okay, but not lashon hove. Really, it's a noun. It's a noun. Whatever. That's the point. Moirosha can mean something that you don't own yet, but eventually will be owned and bequeathed. Or it can mean something that you already yashin. By the way, the Yerushalmi says on an interesting thing. The Yerushalmi has a vote on it that says, yeah, the word Moirosha always implies that there's a weakness in it. So they ask, what about Torah to the one of Moirosha Kielos Yaakov? The answer is there is a weakness in it. Look how easy it is to forget the Torah.
Oh,
if you don't keep on reviewing it. Okay.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. Okay. So that itself was Moshe Rabbeinu's question. How do we understand that pasuk when Asati Oisalachem Moirosha? Is it a Moirosha that you already have Yarshin from your ancestors, or is it a Yerusha that will eventually happen to your children in the future?
One second. It says Vinasati. I know you can say Vinasati.
Vinasati means I will give. No, Vinasati, the Vav is a Vav HaHipuch. It makes it in the future. I will give it to you, Moirosha. So is it I will give it to you and right now it's already Moirosha? Or is it I will give it to you, it will become a Moirosha? Upashtalei Tavayu. So, and the Eibishter answers Moshe Rabbeinu, both questions. He answers him, it's both. On the one hand, Yerusha Lachem Me'avisechem. On the one hand, yes, it's a Yerusha from your ancestors. Therefore, it's considered Mochzak, not Roy. Therefore, Bechorim can get a double portion of it, or Nice Slavchad can get on behalf of their father. But also, the Eibishter is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you should know, when I told you that at the time, I also meant Umerishin Ve'enen Yoshin. It also meant that they are going to bequeath it but not inherit it themselves, because even though this is before Yetzias Mitzrayim, even this is long before the Chet Menaglim, the Eibishter knows the future. And the Eibishter knew that these people who Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to now and telling them that you're going to go out of Mitzrayim, Ve'Yetzias Mitzrayim, are not going to be the actual ones who come in, because it's going to be their children who come in. And thus we also find a similar thing in the Shir Sayyam in Oz Yashir, to be a moi the sito a moi behar nachalofa. They sing, you will bring them and you will plant them in the mountain of your inheritance. To be a new loy nema ela to be a moi. It doesn't say to be a new you will bring us, but to be a moi, which means you will bring them.
Meaning
melamed shemisnabin ve'enin yodin ma'misnabin. It means that the Jewish people at the time were saying nevuah without even realizing what they're saying. This is a year and a half before the Chet Menaglim. But in other words, because the Eibishter knew in advance that they were not going to be the ones to come in. So therefore, when it came to before Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Eibishter used the word Moirosha, which has that dual meaning, rather than Yerusha would just have a singular meaning. And similarly, the Eibishter put it in their heads that when they said the Shir HaSayam, they said to be a Moi Vesita a Moi, rather than to be a Nu Vesita a Nu. that's the other different opinions in Sota. Yeah, we learned recently in Sota that the three different opinions, how they sang Shira Sayam. Yeah, whether they, that we had the different opinions in Sota, whether they were, that Moshe Rabbeinu sang and they just answered Rosh and Tzokim right. after him, or whether they said by after him word for word, or whether they all said together. Yeah,
I remember. Yeah,
whatever it was, they should put. But he, according to the first one, also, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, it was Nibbuvein Yedeyam Anibo. Yeah. They a person has free will, but the Eibush just still knows. Despite the fact a person has free will, the Eibush just still knows what's going to happen. I called self avodah shlus nesuna. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
No, they didn't realize, but later on, after the story of the Chet Meraglim, then it became obvious to them what. Yeah.
So the Eibush doesn't know who's going to be true or not.
No, the Eibush does know. That's the thing. Yediyah ena machrachas habechira. The Eibush's knowledge of what's going to happen doesn't force our bechira one way or the other. So we have bechira, but the Eibush still knows what's going to happen. Yeah, the Rambam talks about it in Hilchos Teshuva. That's a paradox. I call it a chutz mi'yirat shemayim. Fine. It's not the Eibush knows, but he still gives us a free choice. Yeah. Okay.
And what does that say for
Avraham? Okay, you know what? Yeah, okay. It means
he didn't know before.
No. It means that now, that's what Rashi says on the pasuk over there. It means now, so to speak, I'm able to tell the whole world, look what an Avraham Avinu I have.
He knew before,
but now he's saying, I can show off to the whole world, look what an Avraham Avinu I have. Yeah.
Like, I knew my son's going to do good on the test, but now I can tell everyone.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And this is the whole thing that there's not really time for now. But yeah, it's a whole deep and very basic idea in Yiddishkeit that the Eibush knows what's going to happen, but still gives us the chiddush. And you know, also you have the various places siddur to talk about. For example, that we know, I mean, Sukkim can things in Nevuah can happen on many different levels, right? The same way as, for example, the various Nevuahs of Yemos Hamashiach. You have Be'ita, and you have Achishena, and you have, you know. So the same way, for example, there's places the Rebbe talks about, for example, a sicha about we learned earlier in the Masechta that Moshe Rabbeinu writes the last, according to one opinion, Moshe writes the last 8 sukkim, but Yomos Shem Moshe Eved Hashem. It's also in Sota, that's true, but it was also earlier in our Masechta and in the first parak. And the Rebbe discusses over there that what's the point of Moshe Rabbeinu, the point that why Moshe Rabbeinu was writing it is, he wanted to accomplish, let the Jewish people see that it's in the Torah, and the shturim by the Eibush to know we won't let this happen. We are going to do everything we can to prevent that Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't die. It says in the Torah, Vayomos Shem Moshe, and it could happen on a different level. He could lose his Madrega, for example, and that would be a type of misa or whatever. It doesn't have to come true on a gashmiistic level. So the same thing, it could have been that even if they hadn't done that the Chet Meraglim after all, so there would have been on some level it would have been that there the Tzivi Eimoi v'Sitcha Eimoi, that the them and not us, but not necessarily on a gashmiistic level. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now we're going to talk a little bit about some details of the story of Benoit Slavko. The pasuk starts off, but how Moshe looked at Moshe, that the Bnei Slavchon came, and they stood before Moshe, but looked at Elazar HaKohen, and before Elazar HaKohen, this is after Aaron had passed away already. V'lefnei Nesiim b'chol ha'eda, and they're standing in front of the Nesiim and the whole congregation, meaning the whole Sanhedrin. So the question is, what is this? They went to Moshe and Elazar. They went to Moshe first. He didn't answer them. So then they go to Elazar, and then they go to the Nesiim, and then they go to the Heda. What's the logic of it? First, they should be going from the bottom up. The last one they asked is Moshe. It's the lower Bata Dinim. Don't know. So Rabbi Yoshia says, okay, what you have to do is you have to flip around the words in the pasuk. What the pasuk really means is that first they went to the Nesiim v'chol ha'eda, they went to the lower Batidinim, they didn't know the answer, so then maybe they go to Elazar, and he still didn't know, so then they went to Moshe. The pasuk is listing them out of order, because the pasuk is listing them in order of their greatness.
Like
Moshe Rabbeinu first.
You don't like to change it.
We don't like to, but according to Rabbi Yoshia, that's what we have to do.
They know,
whatever it is, they said that. Whatever it is, they said whatever. Whether they said no or whether they said we don't know, whatever. Yeah. So the pasuk doesn't list it in that order that they stood lifnei Eder, lifnei Nesiim, lifnei Elazar, lifnei Moshe, because the pasuk doesn't want to put Talmidim before the Rav. But the fact that the actual order that they did is they went from the bottom up. They went to the Eder, then they went to the Nesiim, then they went to Elazar, then they went to Moshe. That's according to Rabbi Yoshia. Abachanan Oimer Meshum Rabbi Eliezer. No, different answer. But Beit HaMedrash Hoyu Yoshin V'Holchu Va'Amdelahem Lefnei Kula. All of them, Moshe and Elazar and the Siyim and the whole Sanhedrin and the whole Asia, whatever, are sitting in the Beit Medrash. And B'nai Tzlachot walked in and asked and stood in front of everybody and asked to the whole tzibur over there, basically. The Ma'akum Mitzvah, what is the underlying machlokas? Mar Sava Chok and Kavod L'Talmud B'Makom Harav. Abachanan holds that you're allowed to give kavod to a Talmud in the presence of his Rebbe. In other words, that because it shows the importance of the Rebbe, that look how many people he has underneath him. You're not just addressing him personally like he's just one individual person, you're addressing the whole tzibur with him sitting at the head of it, as if to say, look at this, everybody here is your Talmud.
Very expensive.
Yeah, that's one way of looking. That's one way. No, but you're addressing all of them together. Well, Marasava and Chokin, whereas Rabbi Yoshiya holds you're not allowed to do that. Therefore, of necessity, he has to say they can't have asked everybody together. They have to have gone level by level and eventually wound up by Moshe Rabbeinu.
It has to be in a situation where it's clear that you're not disrespecting the
Rebbe. Yes. So, in fact, the Hilchot of Chokin, the Hilchot of Chokin. So, the halacha is that you are allowed to give cover to a Talmud in the presence of the Rebbe, but the halacha is also you're not allowed to. So, Kasha Hilchot Adam. So, what is the bottom line halacha? The answer is loikasha had the poligle rabbi yikara, had the poligle rabbi yikara. It depends. Does the Rebbe himself give covered to the Talmud? Well, in that case, then he would like other people to give covered to that Talmud as well in his presence. As opposed to, if not, then not. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu did give covered to the whole Jewish people because, you know, much earlier, there was a time when Eldad the Major was giving Nevuah over there, and Yeshua comes running, who actually Gershom, Moshe's son, comes running to tell him that Eldad the Major was snabbing Mamachne in Parshas Bahalosa, and Yeshua says, Adoni Moshe Klohim, Haytochen, these guys are saying Nevuah on their own without you being involved over there, put him in jail, or put him in Soche Tzibur, or whatever. And Moshe says, don't worry, me Yitzin Kalam Hashem Nevi'im, I'll buy the whole Jewish people were Nevi'im. So we see that Moshe is Cholak Talmud, is Cholak covered to his Talmudim. So therefore, according to Abba Chanan, then B'nai Tzlachot are perfectly entitled to go into the Beis Medrash and ask the question to everybody present, including Moshe Rabbeinu. But still, they're showing covered to Moshe by showing covered to the Talmudim who are below him. That, look, even the Talmudim of yours are worthy of answering this question, and you're their Rebbe then. Okay. There is, by the way, there's a sicha, I don't remember in what chelek, where the Rebbe talks about the Rashi brings these two opinions on the pasuk also, and of course the question is, as always, why Rashi has to bring the two opinions, and why he has to bring the name of the names. It's a typical Rashi sicha. So in the course of it, the Rebbe talks about the idea. We said on Omer Aleph that this is one of the mitzvahs that historically came about through Sarusa de la Sata. Most mitzvahs came about through Sarusa de Leila. The Eidush, one day, says to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, Dabar Hashem Moshe Leila, such and such. This is one of the ones where Zohu and Nichtivu Ayodan, where the ones Lamasa were Zohu, that it was written through them. So therefore, you have Rabbi Yoshiya and Abba Chanan are talking about two different angles on Sarusa de la Sata, kind of. One is sorry tamikra, like you have a pasuk that's given to us milamayla by the Eibishter, but we don't understand it in our own seichel, so we need to reinterpret it with our own seichel in order to make it fit in our seichel. That's sorry tamikra. The other way of looking at it is we're all sitting in the Beis Medrash learning the Eibishter Torah and start discussing the matter. That's a different angle on it. Sort of a little faster. All right. Tana, we learn in a braisa. B'nai Tzlachot chachmoni yaten, darshoni yaten, tzidkoni yaten. These B'nai Tzlachot, they were smart. Rashbam says, meaning in derech eret, in the ways of the world. Darshoni yaten, they knew how to darshan, psukim. And tzidkoni yaten, and they were tzidkoni yaten. How do we see this? Chachmoni yaten shalafishah dibli. We see that they were smart because they spoke up at the appropriate time. They didn't just stand one day, walk in out of the blue, what are we doing about our father's nachla? They waited until there was an appropriate occasion and then came with a good argument. Namely, the Amr of Shmuel Bar Avi Yitzchok, Malamachoyev, Moshe Rabbeinu Yoshev, the Dorish Parshas Yevamim. What happened is Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting and darshaning and explaining to the people the Parsha of Yevamim, the Parsha of Yevum. The pasuk says, "Kiyeshu achim yachzav." The pasuk says, "When brothers live together and one of them dies childless, then his wife needs yibum uchalit."
Does it mean Moshe
is
sit running with
teacher? Cautious miyoshev. Yeah, the more difficult. What Aaron is referring to is the Gemara in Megillah that says that until the times of, I think, of Gamliel Azokin, they used to learn Torah standing. After that, people became weaker, and they had to start sitting. But even there, the Gemara says that even before that, Koshos Miyusha, that the more difficult things, they would teach and learn sitting down, because you have to be able to focus. Okay.
You saw that somewhere else.
I don't remember if it was that. Could be. Anyway. So Moshe is talking about that. At that point, is when they come in and then grab their opportunity. That's the chachmonius. That's the smart thing. Amruloi, they say, im kibbein onu chashuvin, shno lonu nachla kibbein. Look, if we're considered like a son, we five daughters, if we're considered the equivalent of a son, fine, then we should have a nachla, just as if we were a son. The imloi, Imlav, and if not, it's Yabim Menu. Then fine, you're just talking about Yibum over here. Fine, if it's considered our father didn't leave behind any descendants, and we're not considered descendants for purposes of Nakla, we shouldn't be considered descendants for purposes of Yibum either. Let our mother have Yibum, and that way our father's name will be reestablished among the Jewish people. In other words, one of Slocha's brothers should do Yibum with his wife, if you're going to argue. Now, the halacha is takanach. Halacha is when you have daughters, but then that's their arguing. Well, if we're considered Zera, if we're considered children of Slocha regarding Yibum, then we should also be considered regarding Nachla. By the way, the Tertus Chaim says, where do we see from their argument that they had anything to do with Yibum? Because they make a point of saying the word, Loma Yigora Shem Avinu, which is Mishpachte. They use the word, why should our
like
father's name, right, like by Yibum, because Loymacha Shmoy Miyisrael. So therefore, so that teaches us that they were talking based on, not so much Xer Shava, really, you can't dash an Xer Shava on your own, but we see from that they were concerned about his name, just as by Yibum, the Torah is concerned about his name.
That's what they were
told. That's the smart thing of it. Miyad vayakrav Moshe es mishpatim l'pnei Hashem. So sure enough, immediately Moshe Rabbeinu brings the case to Hashem, because he taka doesn't know the answer, as we said before. There is, by the way, a different verse that some people say that once Bnei Tzlach had said, so they pointed out, as we have
learned, he knew the answer.
No, so he said he knew part of the answer, but he didn't know the whole answer, that he needed Davish to clarify for him. Right. But there's actually a different verse that somebody says, I can't remember who, that the verse was, they had told him, look, our father wasn't from Adas Kodach, he wasn't from the Raglim, he wasn't from the Maslonim and whatnot. So Moshe Rabbeinu felt, you know what, then this is a little bit of shoychat to me. This is a little bit of like trying to make me play favorite. He was never against you, therefore he recused himself and referred it to Davish. Yeah.
He couldn't. He said, "Maybe I'm not completely."
No, but that was an idea of it also, because he felt he couldn't be completely objective. Yeah.
Wow. He didn't tell him that. So.
I should mention, by the way, besides the two different opinions that we were saying before, whether Slufkud was from the Makoshish Eitzim or the Ma'apilim, both of which happened near the beginning of the 40 years in the Midbar, the Zoya mentions another possibility that he was actually one of the people who was killed during the episode with the snakes, which in that case is towards the end of the 40 years. Our Gemara holds that he was either the Mekoshesh Eitzim or the Ma'apilim, which were near the beginning. And the Gemara is going to say soon that the girls were all at least 40 years old, which had to be if he died near the beginning of the Midbar. According to the Zoyar, it didn't necessarily have to be, because he died close to the end of the Midbar. Okay, anyway. Darshani is saying, we see that
according to the Zoyar, they could have waited because they wanted to,
yeah, okay. Okay, Darshani is saying, where do we see that they had the capability of Darshaning? Shahayu Omris, because they said, look, Ilu Hayo Lebein Lo Dibanu. If our father didn't have a son, and they actually say Ki Ein Lo Dibanu, they knew already that a son Yarshans his father, because they knew Parshas Nachlois. So they knew to understand that if their father had had a son, then he would come ahead of the daughter, which was the chiddush in that. The point is, we learned earlier in the parak, we had Rapapa asking Abaya, maybe the pasuk means to imply that if you have a son and a daughter, they inherit equally. No, they were darshanis. They knew to darshan the pasuk correctly and understand that a son comes ahead of a daughter and not that they inherit equally. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says, first of all, how do they know Parshas Nachlois? The whole point is Parshas Nachlois is only given after this, after their request. So Tosfos answers on a different basis. You have the pasuk in Parshas Behar, the past week parasha, that said, "V'snachaltem oisim l'vneichem acharechem." We quoted it earlier in the parak. You will bequeath them to your sons, which we learn not your daughters. They were darshanis. They were able to darshan that correctly and realize that if he had a son, then they wouldn't be in the running for flour. Okay. Valtanya Bas. What about though? You have another braisa that says that they said if he had a daughter, we wouldn't have spoken up. How is that possible? Rabbi Yirmiyah says, okay, of necessity, you have to delete the part that says Bas. Obviously, that's a mistaken braisa. Abaya Omer, no, Afilohoya Basla Bain Lo Divarim. No, what they mean is not if he had a daughter besides us five. They meant even if the son died and left a daughter, we wouldn't speak up because they knew with halacha that we learned before that the Sukkim argued again that a daughter doesn't inherit when there's a son's daughter in place. So that's we see they were Darshanis. Sidkonius saying, and how do we see they were Sidkonius? Shalem Nistu El Lahogun Lahem, because they only married somebody who's suitable for them. Now, we're going to learn later on, that technically, tomorrow, they could have married anyone they wanted. Even after the Eibishter said that a daughter who inherits Nachla has to marry within her Shevet, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, that didn't apply to them. We'll see. But nevertheless, they still went and married somebody from within their Shevet. Lahogul Mahem, to somebody who's suitable for them. And it says they married their cousin, because they wanted to adopt to marry somebody who's suitable. And not only that, Tony Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Afilu Ktanah behem lo nisus, Chutma Boim Shana. The youngest of them was married. She was no less than 40 years old because they were willing to wait that long in order to find their proper zivug. They weren't just going to marry anybody. Okay, the question is, Amy, what do you mean they only married a 40 year older? If a woman gets married at under 20 years old, she'll be able to have children until she's about 60. Bas Esrim, if she gets married over 20, Yeledes Araboim, then she can have children till she's about 40. Bas Araboim, Shuvane Yeledes. But if a woman only gets married after 40, she's not going to be able to have children. And here the whole point was that we're going to have, nobody's going to marry them after 40 then. They themselves shouldn't have waited till 40. They don't have a mitzvah period of Rivia, technically fine. But still, how is anybody marrying them at that age? The answer is element. So should Sidkonius say Nasla and Nes Tiyachet? Because there was Sidkonius and Nes happened to them, like Yecheved, who had a baby at a very advanced age, as we will talk about tomorrow, and therefore, so they did similarly. They were on that same high level of B'tochen and the Eidishter, that fine, we're not going to just get married to anybody. We are going to wait until we find husbands who are tzaddikim, who are appropriate for people like us. That means that we might be taking our chances.
Adam decided to marry in the Shevet before the judgment was made.
Yeah, but the point is that all this time, in all those 40 years, they had never found the proper zivuk. They never found the proper person who was roi for them as Chachmonius and Darshanius and Sidkonius. So in the end, they should benefit them with children after all. Yeah.
Okay. We had a strong argument in favor of women running to.
Not everybody is like myself, but yes, I mean, nowadays, I'm always big on women learning Torah nowadays. But yeah, okay. In the olden days, women learned in the household. Yeah, you don't hit on that. Okay.